भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय वासुदेवाय This morning from Canto 3, Chapter 5, entitled Vidura's Talks with Maitreya, and reading texts 21 through 23. So, to set the scene, we're in Badrinath, or Maitreya is there, and Vidura has gone to find Maitreya under the instruction of Uddhava, because previously Krishna just left the planet. Krishna had left Dwarka and he left Dwarka after the destruction of the Yadu dynasty at the Prabhas Kshetra, that pastime that Krishna, by his internal potency, orchestrated, where the entire assembly of the host of demigods that had appeared on earth to assist Krishna's pastimes had been withdrawn to go back to their residences, so that Krishna could then also leave after that incident, Prabhas Kshetra incident. Krishna left Dwarka and he went to a forest in Vrindavan. While in that forest in Vrindavan, Uddhava found him. Imagine finding Krishna in the forest. Krishna spoke Uddhava Gita. In that assembly, well, in the presence of Krishna and Uddhava, was Maitreya, who, by providential arrangement, just happened to be passing through the same part of the same forest. And whoa, look at that. There's Uddhava and Krishna. So he heard the entire Uddhava Gita firsthand. And Krishna gave parting instructions to both Uddhava and to Maitreya. The instruction for Uddhava: go to the place where the devotees of Narayan Rishi are. I wanted to give my association to them because of their deep affection for me, because the Lord is Bhakta Vatsala, he reciprocates with the love and devotion of his devotees. But I'm not able to go there, my pastimes, time to go, my pastimes are finished. So you go carrying my message to them, and that intimate relationship between Krishna and Uddhava is very beautifully described in the Bhagavatam, because Uddhava was so close with Krishna and even looked like Krishna. Same complexion, dressed the same way as Krishna, his mood was the same as Krishna, he was accepted. Krishna's devotee. So Uddhava had that assignment. And it was that assignment that was enabling him to maintain his life, because otherwise his attachment for Krishna was so strong that separation from Krishna would have otherwise finished him. So Krishna was giving him life by giving him some service. And Maitreya also was given some service. Specifically mentioned before Krishna left. When Uddhava heard this, he was thrilled. He heard that Krishna spoke about Vidura. Krishna said to Maitreya, very soon Vidura will come to you and I want you to instruct him in the same teachings you've just heard me explain to Uddhava. So Krishna left. And just after Krishna left, Vidura appeared in the same forest, coincidentally, in the same place where Krishna spoke Uddhava Gita, and Vidura met Uddhava. Oh, Uddhava, how nice to see you here in the forest. And by seeing Uddhava, he had so many questions about Dwarka, because Uddhava was such an important person in Dwarka. So you see somebody from such an important place as Dwarka, Krishna's own abode. He asked about Krishna and Balaram and Ugrasena and Vasudeva and Devaki and Rohini and all the, by name, so many personalities who reside in Dwarka, knowing they were all gone. But he didn't say that, because he didn't want to say that. What a way to start a conversation. How do you feel about everybody that's just left this world in mass, including Krishna? Because we didn't say that. A couple of chapters follow, just by hearing a question about Krishna, Uddhava went into this state of trance. It's described in the Bhagavatam that he left this world. He went to the Lord's abode with the Lord, and he was there with him. His external body was silent in apparent external trance because he was with Krishna. His thought of Krishna had become so intensified just by hearing Vidura's questions. That was the platform of Uddhava. But his mood of service was so strong, he wanted to come back and answer Vidura's question, to serve Vidura. So with great struggle, he came back to external consciousness and began speaking about Krishna for about 2.5 chapters, non-stop. And when he finished, the whole night had passed, and it was morning. The sun was rising, and he bid farewell to Vidura, saying, I have to go now. Krishna's given me some service. But the questions that you've asked about Krishna are known perfectly well by Maitreya. He's senior to me in any case, although spiritually Uddhava was far more advanced. He's senior to me in any case, by age and scholarship. So you should go find him. In fact, Krishna said that you should go find him. When Vidura heard that, his heart shattered. He thought, just before leaving, Krishna thought of me. And he also thought, but Krishna's gone. So it was both joy and great sorrow at the same time. There's lots of those things in spiritual life. So Uddhava got up and left. And Vidura fell to the ground sobbing. thinking of Krishna, who's gone. But Krishna had given some instruction, so he went to find Maitreya. And when he found Maitreya, that's the beginning of the fifth chapter that we're reading, Vidura places questions. He honors Maitreya, and then he places questions before Maitreya in relation to things that he wanted to hear about Krishna. Specifically, he's very, very purposeful in his questions. He's not interested, how to say this properly, he's not interested simply in information. He's not interested in the cause and effect of material events. But he is interested in the Lord, and he's interested in the soul beyond the body, and he's interested in understanding Krishna's wonderful acts, particular, he mentions, in relation to the Vishnu avatars. The Vishnu avatars means, or Purusha avatars means, in relation to creation. So, this is a second time, just like in the second canto, similar thing happens where Maharaj Parikshit has the opportunity to ask about anything from Shukadeva Goswami, who knows everything, and he asks him about creation. He doesn't go, you know, tell me about Krishna and the gopis, because you know Shukadeva. He doesn't ask that. He asks about creation. And similarly here. But he's specific in reference to the transcendental nature of the Lord. It's not just learning some technology. It's describe the compassion of the Lord and how with his own potencies he does wonderful acts. Starting with creation, maintenance and dissolution. This is an important subject for Srimad Bhagavatam and for us. This is, in technical terms, it's sambandha gyan. It's understanding the relationship of things that emanate from their source and the source of emanation. How to properly understand this place that we're in relation to the Lord. Not just the technology of it, but in relation to the Lord. From a source that knows. Maitreya knows. Not just by scholarship. He directly received this stage of spiritual perfection by direct association with the Personality of Godhead and was instructed to explain it all to Vidura. So, after his questions, and those questions open the door for several chapters of, a few cantos worth of answers from Maitreya. So, coming attractions in the Bhagavatam is Vidura and Maitreya back and forth. And then we'll go down, we'll go up a layer, and this is Shukadeva Goswami describing to Maharaj Parikshit, and then it's Sutta Goswami describing to the sages of Naimisharanya about the conversation between Shukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit, which includes a conversation about Maitreya and Vidura. That's how Puranas are. There's layers of people speaking things. After Maitreya hears Vidura's questions. Immediately, Vidura is honored by Maitreya. I'll just read those verses. Oh, Vidura, all glory unto you. You have inquired for me of the greatest of all goodness, and thus you have shown your mercy both to the world and to me, because your mind is always absorbed in thoughts of the transcendence. O Vidura, it is not at all wonderful that you have so accepted the Lord without deviation of thought, for you were born from the semen of Vyasadeva. I know that you are now Vidura due to the christening of Mandavya Muni, and that formerly you were King Yamaraj, the great controller of living entities after their death. You were begotten by the son of Satyavati, Vyasadeva, and the kept wife of your brother. We discussed all those things, so I'm not going to review them. He's in the process of honoring Vidura. It's not inappropriate that the listener honors the speaker. It's not inappropriate that the speaker honors the listener. Maitreya knows all these things because he heard them from Vyas. Because this gives you an idea of the level or the standard of Maitreya. Maitreya and Vyas were friends. Could you imagine having Vyasadeva as a friend? And just like whatever Vyas knows, you can just ask him and he tells you and he knows everything. Perfectly, not like has an opinion, but he knows everything perfectly. So I know all these things about you, Vidura, because Vyas informed me. Now, this verse, text 21. Your good self is one of the eternal associates of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for whose sake the Lord, while going back to his abode, left instructions with me. So Prabhupada explains very clearly. It's not that Vidura or in the previously positioned Yamaraj, that Yamaraj is an eternal associate of the Lord, because it's a post. The Lord of Death is a post that somebody occupies. When Yamaraj left, Aryama took his position, because you have to have somebody doing that service. A lot of people dying. You can't have a long standing line, you know, waiting for 100 years while Vidura is gone or Yamaraj is gone. So it's a post, it's occupied, but it's not an eternal service. It's time bound, and persons take up those time bound services. But the point that Prabhupada makes is that he was such a confident Yamaraj, and maybe not even all Yamarajas, but particularly that Yamaraj who took this position of becoming Vidura, is such a confidential servant of the Lord that he's on the same level as the eternal associates of the Lord. Prabhupada gives this expression, not here but elsewhere. There are categories of perfection. Nitya Siddha, eternally perfect. Sadhana Siddha, becoming perfect through sadhana. And Kripa Siddha, those that become perfect just by mercy. Then he makes the point, however, on the spiritual platform, siddha is siddha. They don't have a, you know, exchange of cards with one another. Are you a nitya siddha? Are you a sadhana siddha? Are you a kripa siddha? What's your credential, sir? Siddha is siddha. So Yamaraj is such a qualified person, such a confidential associate of, or servant of the Lord, that he's on the same platform as the eternal associates. And so he is honored. Yamaraj, in the form of Vidura, is honored as much as Krishna's eternal associates. Krishna was returning to the spiritual realm. Actually, he was just continuing with his lila. But as it's being presented here, returning to his eternal associates, and he counted Vidura on the same platform, on the same caliber, amongst his eternal associates, and requested Maitreya to offer some service. So he's saying, I was asked to do the service, but you're this exalted person, so I'm doing this just as a service, because Krishna asked me to, and I'm honoring you. And because Vidura happened to be among them means those most confidential devotees of the Lord, while returning to Vaikuntha, the Lord left instructions for Vidura with Maitreya Muni. So Maitreya Muni is just like a postal messenger. Here's a letter for Vidura. Make sure he gets it okay. Similarly, Srila Prabhupada likened the role of a spiritual master in the very same way, a postal peon. I don't know if you have this sense of innuendo with the word peon, but peon is not a very flattering word. Peon means, you know, this little insignificant boop. That's what a peon is. A postal peon. That's what the spiritual master is, a postal peon. But it's a very confidential service at the same time, as Maitreya is being given this very confidential service to convey Krishna's message to Vidura. And when Vidura arrives on the scene, oh, I honor you. You are one of the Lord's eternal associates, or on the same platform as the eternal associate of the Lord, who he left this world to go to them, and you're here amongst us. How fortunate we are to have your association. Generally, the eternal associates of the Lord in the spiritual sky do not come to the material world. Sometimes they come, however. By the order of the Lord, not to hold any administrative post, but to associate with the Lord in person, or to propagate the message of God in human society. Prabhupada doesn't mention that he's speaking about himself, but he's speaking about himself. Such empowered representatives are called Chaktyadesha avatars, or incarnations invested with transcendental power of attorney. Such power of attorney is a legal phrase that means somebody that you give power of attorney to can sign their name to something, and it's as good as you're signing your name to that something. That's legally. You give power of attorney. You trust this individual so much, they can sign your life away. And it's legally binding because they signed it, because you gave your power of attorney to them. They can settle some dispute, or they can receive funds, or they can, whatever. They have all the assets and none of the liabilities. Power of attorney. So a Shaktivesha avatar, Prabhupada is saying, is like that. They are empowered by Krishna to represent him. And so they act as good as Krishna being present. because of their empowerment. Examples of Shaktivesh avatars given in the scriptures include four Kumaras. They're empowered in the Lord's Gyan Shakti, his knowledge potency. Brahma, Lord Brahma in his creative potency, Trishti Shakti. Prithu Maharaj in the Lord's ruling potency, his Palana Shakti, and so on. They're Shaktivesh avatars. And included in that is one who is empowered specifically to propagate God consciousness. And a person who can do that in this incredibly significant way is called the Shaktivesh avatar. In the second canto, Srila Prabhupada includes Christ as a Shaktivesh avatar. And we can say, not just, you know, by sentiment, but by practical demonstration, that Srila Prabhupada was such a person, uniquely empowered. Because in the history of the world, I mean, go into world history, and where is there a case where one person has taken a otherwise world religion and established that world religion all over the world in a period of 11 years? The answer, there isn't anyone. How long did it take for Christianity to spread around the world? How long did it take for Islam to spread around the world? Prabhupada was uniquely empowered. So, in Vidura's case, he didn't particularly, you know, propagate Krishna consciousness or Hare Krishna movement or something like that all over the world, but it's commented in the first canto of chapter 13 when Manduka Muni, here it's mentioned differently, Mandavya Muni, but it's the same person, Mandavya Muni, Manduka Muni, when he was cursed by, or put into a difficult position by Yamaraj because of some misbehavior when he was a small boy. Mandavya Muni cursed Yamaraj, you should become a Shudra because you don't understand the principles of Dharma, yet you're taking the post of one who does. Prabhupada explains that it gave Yamaraj a break from that yucky service of having to send living entities into hellish existences every day, all day long. But it gave him opportunity to speak Krishna Katha, to be with Krishna and Krishna's pastimes and speak Krishna Katha to not necessarily the best audience, Dhritarashtra, Duryodhana, but you know, the Pandavas also, and others where Vidura's life touched. So he could directly propagate Krishna's message, transcendental knowledge. So to get that opportunity, message is, for us to have that opportunity, it's a great privilege. And we don't have, like, you know, the alternative of going back and becoming Yamaraj when we're finished. We can go back to being, you know, a housewife or a kid in school or, you know, whatever else we go back to. He's going to go back to being Yamaraj. But while he's present, he was in this very unique position. That's what's being honored by Maitreya. So after honoring him, and then he starts honoring the questions he asked. Text 22. I shall therefore describe to you the pastimes by which the personality of Godhead extends his transcendental potency for the creation, maintenance, and dissolution of the cosmic world as they occur one after another. So he's kind of he's making this announcement. I'm going to be speaking about creation, about the personality of Godhead, as he's using his the phrase is there in the verse, Yogamaya. Yogamaya. Uru Brimhita. Brimhita means expanding. He expanded his Yogamaya potency. So, Yogamaya potency, we're in ISKCON kind of accustomed to think about Yogamaya potency as in relation to the spiritual activities of Krishna. He enacts pastimes through the agency of his Yogamaya potency. This is a little different. This is the reflection of his Yogamaya potency. And the reflection of the Yogamaya potency is our dear friend Mahamaya. We know her very well. At least we associate with her a lot. We don't really understand what she's up to so much, but we associate with her a lot. And Mahamaya is a reflection of Yogamaya. Just like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Naham prakasha sarvasya yogamaya samavrita mudhoyam nabijanati. So, Krishna covers himself by his, Prabhupada translates it as creative potency, yogamaya. So what does that mean? It's the reflection of, like so, just like there's an object and there's a reflection of an object. Here's an apple, here's a mirror, and here's a reflection of the apple. So Mahamaya is the reflection of Yogamaya. But the reflection has no existence apart from the object. Of course, you have to have a reflecting surface, but the reflection has no existence apart from the object that it's reflecting, because it's but a reflection. So Mahamaya, this place, is but a reflection of Yogamaya. And Krishna expands his Yogamaya to manifest in a reflected form this place, the kingdom of Maya. And he does it by his own potency. It's nothing other than his own potency. Now, theologically, that can be a problem for some people. It is a problem for some people. It's a problem for some people that, you know, different ways of saying it. One of the ways of saying it is, why do bad things happen if God is all good? You've heard that one before? Especially when those bad things happen to you. Or somebody dear to you. Or you look at the world and say, this is a mess. These people are crazy. And there's so much pain and suffering and yada, yada, yada going on here. And how can all this come from God? Because God is all good. And if everything comes from Him, then why isn't it good? Because He's all good. He must be bad. Or maybe he doesn't exist. Because, you know, me and my family, we're really good, and this bad thing happened, and I don't know why it happened. God must have forgotten us. Something like that. So, you know, how do bad things happen? One of the things you can say is, it's not real. That's Mayavada. Jagat Mithya. It's false. Another is, God doesn't exist. It is bad. And God, it can't be a God that's good that does stuff like this, that God doesn't exist. You can like all these different ideas out there in the marketplace. But the Vaishnava understanding, the understanding from Srimad Bhagavatam is, it's an expansion of his own energy, but there is this Veda, or the difference between the energy and God, and how the living entity regards his energy is determining the good and bad. Sada sadyoni jamasu purusha prakriti stomi bhunte prakriti jan gunan karanam guna sangosya sada sadyoni jamasu. The living entities create their own misfortune or good fortune by how they regard that prakriti of the Lord. That's his energy, yes. But there's another factor, since just God and his energy, there's this living entity thing called us. And how we regard his energy, how we treat material nature, determines whether good fortune or ill fortune comes our way. Hey, that means we're responsible. Rather than saying, we're responsible. Or we're irresponsible. And so we have those misfortunes. It's just the nature of the place. We don't have to be here. We chose to be here, apart from Krishna, trying to do our little God project, establish our kingdom of God, without God, in God's kingdom. How is the king going to feel about that? In his kingdom, someone's establishing, I'm king, forget that guy. He doesn't exist. Or it's not real. Or whatever your ideology is of defiance. Your little God project. Well, you know, you're subject to the king's laws. So, we're going to hear it as it is. We're going to hear how the Lord, by his yogamaya potency, in this reflected form, through the agency of the Purusha avatars, makes this place, and how he maintains it, and how he withdraws it in sequence, one after the next. That's the subject matter that we're hearing. This is the proclamation. We're going to be hearing all about it in a proper way. The personality of Godhead, text 23. The personality of Godhead, the master of all living entities, existed prior to the creation as one without a second. It is by his will only that the creation is made possible. And again, everything merges into him. The Supreme Self is symptomized by different names. You see, in that process of bringing into being the creation by his own potency, by his own will, he doesn't need any other agency. He doesn't need permission from anybody. He doesn't need a license. He doesn't need to go to school to do it. He just does it. By his will. There's agents through whom he acts. There's unlimited agents. And those agents are deriving their strength and power and capacity and intelligence and education and everything from him. One may not understand the cause of all causes and think, you know, that so-and-so is the cause. Or such-and-such principle that I discovered in my laboratory, that's the cause. But behind that principle or that personality that's manipulating a principle, there's the cause of all causes. And Maitreya is the knower of that. And the Bhagavatam discloses that. In fact, what Prabhupada explains in the purport is, this is a commentary in chapter 3, canto 3, of a verse that's in canto 2, that's the first of the chatur-sloki verses of the Bhagavatam. What's the chatur-sloki verses of the Bhagavatam? It's the essence of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam in four verses. So if you want to learn Srimad Bhagavatam, just learn those four verses, and you can understand the whole Bhagavatam. But if you want to get an explanation of those four verses, at least the first of those four verses, you can read what Maitreya says, because he knows it, and he's explaining it to Vidura and to us. And the principle is that there is a cause of all causes, as Krishna. He just left the planet, but that he's the cause of all causes. He created the place, he came for some time, and then he left. But before even the place existed, he existed. The first of the chatur-sloki verses says, it's mentioned in the purport, it begins, Aham evasam evagre, which is translated as, before creation, I alone existed. During the period of cosmic manifestation, I alone exist. And after cosmic annihilation, guess what? I alone exist. I alone exist. I alone exist. And I alone exist. Which means the creation is a manifestation of his energies. And when those energies are withdrawn, they are resting within him for some time. And then again, they're expanded by his will, and there is a difference and non-difference, simultaneous relationship between the creation and him. The non-difference is, it's his energy. The difference is, energetic and energy are not the same. That's pretty simple, right? Energy and energetic are not the same. Classic example, the sun. It's morning, and the light of the sun is coming through the window. It's not like the sun just came through the window. My God, we burst into fire. The sun comes in the window. We get really hot first. And it's nice and cool out there. The sun is up. So the light of the sun and the sun are inseparable but different. They're one but different. The energy is inseparable from the energetic, and yet the energy is not the energetic. There's a oneness and difference between the energies of God and God. I alone exist is emphasizing the oneness aspect. Bearing in mind, a thoughtful person should also bear in mind, there's also a difference aspect. Maitreya is mentioning it. He's expanding, he's giving like a commentary, a purport on that chapter sloki verse. Before the creation, there was only the personality of Godhead. There were no Purusha incarnations, and certainly no living entities. Although they were within his body, they weren't manifest in active feature. Nor was there the material energy. Of course, the material energy is eternally existing, it's just in an unmanifest state. The Purusha incarnations and all different energies of the Supreme Lord were merged in him only. Paragraph. The personality of God is described herein as the master of all other living entities. He is like the sun disk, and the living entities are like molecules of the sun's rays. The existence of the Lord before the creation is confirmed by the Shrutis. Vasudeva va idam agra asitna brahma nacha shankaraha, etc., etc. Because everything that being is an emanation from the personality of Godhead, he is always existing alone without a second. Even when things are manifest, he is existing alone without a second. He has no competitor. There's no equal. There's this theology somewhere out there that says there's God and there's Satan. And there's like this eternal heavyweight championship of the world. And they're slugging it out between God and Satan. And then like Satan's got his forces. And they're devils, and God's got his forces, they're angels, and go, yay, God's team, and boo, devil's team, but then there's the devil's team, yay, devil, and boo, I'm God, and like that. There's a theology, something like that. There's no competitor for God. In fact, there is only one thing, God and his energies. There's the living entities that can really mess up and how they address themselves to his energies. Everything other than him, including his plenary expansions, the Vishuddhatvas, is his part and parcel. Before the creation, there were no Karnadakshaya Vishnu, Karbadakshaya Vishnu, or Shiradakshaya Vishnu. There's no Brahma or Shankara. The Vishnu plenary expansion and the living entities beginning from Brahma are separated parts and parcels. Anyway, so it's going to go further, but this is a laying the foundation for having a proper understanding of what is this place? How is it functioning? How are we to understand it and address ourselves to it properly? To be continued. Any questions?
Yes. Like when we are speaking to the new people or to other devotees, like, you know, like taking this example, how Maitreya regarded Vidura. So, like, how should we, how can we apply that scenario?
Depends on the qualification of the person. If they're Vidura, it's ditto. But appropriate for the person. Our dealings with others should be appropriate to their position. Naturally, and fundamentally, I should say, respect should go to all living entities. And respect should be according to the position of those living entities. So if you encounter Vidura, or a Vidura capacity person in the course of your receiving guests at the temple, then your respect should be commensurate with that position. Yes? You don't know that what?
As I know that Lord Brahma is the topmost living entity.
Yeah.
So how can avatar is the incarnation of Maharaj? I thought that like only the Vishnu Tattvas are the incarnations.
You thought that only which were incarnations?
Vishnu Tattvas.
Oh, there's a category. Shakyamesh avatars where jivas are given the same potency as the Lord Himself, and they can act as the Lord Himself because they're invested with the Lord's own potency. Krishna can do that. Here's my potency. The fullness of my potency.
Really?
Yes, the fullness of my potency. In this department. So that you can do some service. And so such persons are respected in a very special way. Shakti Avesh avatars. Avesh, they're invested with the Lord's own potency for certain purposes. It's a detail. Doesn't follow from your question, but it's a detail that's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita as well as teachings of Lord Chaitanya, where Lord Chaitanya is discussing this with Sanatan Goswami about the categories of avatars. There are some Shaktivesh, well, there's one Shaktivesh avatar that's also Vishnu type of. And that's Anantashesh. He's bearing the planets upon his hoods, like one might carry a mustard seed on one's head. It's so insignificant to Lord Anantashesh. He's an example of Shakyamesh avatar, that's Vishnu Tattva. Others, at least others that I'm aware of, they're Jiva Tattva invested with Vishnu Shakti. Okay. Anything else? Oh, I'm sorry.
Guru Maharaj, as we are part and parcel of Krishna, and you also mentioned that we create our own misfortune or good fortune, depending on how we create the energy of God. I've also heard that each soul has certain capacity when being part and parcel of Krishna. Is it that when we strive for perfection in the service, Is the capacity, is the limitation that is originally when it was created soul, or
is the capacity of each soul inherent within each soul?
Yes.
That's your question.
Yes.
To say yes to your question does not mean that that discounts the possibility of Krishna further empowering that living entity. Let's take the example of a piece of wood. There's fire capacity in a piece of wood. Take that piece of wood and bring it closer and closer and closer and closer to a fire, and suddenly the fire comes out. Living entities have their innate potential or potency or capacity, as you would say. The fullness of that capacity may not come out. It may come out, but it's dependent upon proximity to Krishna and the intimacy of connection with Krishna. What do you think? Is that all right?
Do I need to know what's my capacity, or I just...
Well, in one sense, like, you know, if you try to jump over a 10-foot wall, you're going to get a broken nose. You have to have some idea what your capacity is. If you try to exceed your capacity presently by, let's say, imitating Haridas Thakur, or imitating the austerities of Raghunath Das Goswami, you die. It's not a capacity. So in that sense, we need to know what our capacity is. And in principle, following Haridas Thakur, we should try to increase our chanting. Following Raghunath Das Goswami, we should minimize bodily necessities, particularly in the eating department, as Raghunath Das Goswami did. We have to know our capacity. But capacity can increase as our proximity to the fire increases, as our advancement in Krishna consciousness goes further, we have greater capacity. And within a period of time, whatever that period of time might be, you know, a day or a week or a month or a year, our capacity may fluctuate. And we have to allow for that. So, in that sense, we should be aware of our capacity, as far as making vratas and trying to accomplish something. Yes?
I have some questions from yesterday during today's class.
Okay.
One is, when you were explaining about when a person has no material shelters, then they take shelter of Krishna. I was just thinking that and also you explained about how by getting detached from the material shelters and attached to Krishna, that love awakens. I was thinking in my case, I have a lot of material shelters, and if I have to practice that attachment, to Krishna's representatives, would that material shelters go away slowly, or how should I take it?
Well, built into the statement that you made is an assumption. The assumption is that, in fact, that as I take shelter of Krishna and Krishna's representatives, one may be doing so, or may be partially doing so, or may not be doing so, depending upon how strongly one holds onto material shelters. And that is to say, devotional service is not a vending machine. It's not automatically. It is personal, and so proportionate to the shelter that we take in Krishna and Krishna's representatives, to that degree, proportionately, our attraction for our material shelters will dissipate. But it's not, do it the other way. Well, let me see. Certain of my shelters I can let go of. Certain other ones, I really like them. Then there's another category, I don't really like them, but I know that I'm attached to them, although I don't really like them. So I'm just not going to even pay attention to these ones that I really like. And the ones that I'm just attached to, I'm just going to try to go that direction. and they'll just like kind of go away. I can maintain them. They just go away. There has to be a willingness to let go. Then Krishna can take them. Of course, Krishna isn't depending upon us to like, he can just snatch them from us too.
Oh, Krishna.
Stand before Krishna and say, my dear Lord Krishna, please take away all my attachments except those ones. If you get your hand over there and you're that one, I'm going to... Don't touch that one, Krishna. That's part one. Part two?
Different question, Maharaj, about chanting. You were explaining that when we chant, because of the covering, the conditioned souls tend to think that Krishna is so far away, even though he is near. So, the question what I am having is, because I turned away, I'm really far away from there.
Because?
I turned away and I...
Yeah, we all did. In the same boat.
So I'm far away from Krishna. So how should I take this message that Krishna is here? Or should I take it as I'm still just turning away?
Well, you can either way make sure that your mood is a humble one. The humble mood with Krishna is, Krishna, you're so kind. Even I'm this, rebellious personality. You're so kind. You're making yourself so accessible through your holy name. Krishna, you are so kind. And it melts the heart. The other is, Krishna, although you're so kind, you're making yourself accessible, my heart is so hard, I can't even acknowledge your presence. So then the appeal is, my dear Lord Krishna, please show special mercy, or representatives of Krishna, Lord Nityananda, please show your special mercy. And even my heart is closed, please deliver the pure holy name, like that. In either case, it's humble or humble. Yes.
Maharaj, like, this is not actually directly related to the class today.
Okay.
But spoke about Yamraj, so I was just thinking, like, I read this Ajamila story, and there the conversation between Vishnudutas and Yamadutas happened. There, like, the Yamadutas, like, they don't even know, like, there is, like, they don't know, like, Vishnudutas are, they don't know who they are,
right.
And they are saying, like, till now we know only our
master is Yamraj. That's right.
So, while reading that, I was just wondering, like, Yamraj is the greatest devotee of the Lord, and they are his servants, and is it because of the service they are doing, like, they are not aware of the...
It's not because of the service. It's just, he's the Lord of death, and who escapes death? I mean, come on, we're the agents of death. Who are you guys? But you're something special about you. Not just you're confident and bold, but you're fabulously, incredibly beautiful and effulgent, and just your presence makes us respect you, but who are you? So, we have that experience, in certainly a different form than the Yamadutas, but where, very in an immature way, we don't have respect for other people, other, you know, persons that have a connection with the personality of Godhead other than, you know, our own little world. It's kind of like, you know, a small child and their parents. That's all they know. That's all they know. And you mean there's somebody besides my parents? And their parents haven't said, there's nobody else but us. It's not like Kamaraj just misinformed them. He's a servant of the Lord. So because they're coming and asking, later he explains, no. Like, you know, in the second canto, Narada says a similar thing to Brahma. Are you God? I mean, you created this whole thing. But I see you're sitting there meditating. Upon whom are you meditating? Does that mean that there's more than one God? And that's one of the things that the Yamadutas say. Is there more than one God? That would be a really bad arrangement, they say. Because then people might get conflicting signals. And then, you know, it's all a mess. So it's got to be one God. I thought that was you, the Lord of Death. Please explain. If you think that we're competent to understand. Competence to understand is the shortcoming of the Yamadutas. They're somehow really gross, at the same time having a very important, subtle service to do. That's the difficult combination. Yes?
Maharaj, I have a question regarding drawing the line between principles versus common sense.
Wow.
Well, basically, applying the principles based on the time, place, circumstance. For example, say truth.
Like which?
Truth.
Speaking the truth?
Yeah. So if it's if a stranger comes by and, you know, they ask you something, you wouldn't, certain details, you wouldn't honestly expose them.
Yeah.
And in that case...
If the stranger walking by the door said, do you have a lot of money in your house? Right. Where do you keep it?
Right. So
you might not say.
Right. So... I mean, well, not that extreme, but still, yeah. In that case, is it okay to compromise the principle?
No. It's time, place, and circumstance.
Okay.
Let's take another example. A teacher is teaching, and they have three classes. One of the classes is the second graders. Another class is the college kids. Another class is to all PhDs. And their assignment is the same subject matter, so they're going to present it according to time, place, and circumstance, according to different audiences. And it's not like, you're only kids, so I'm not going to tell you everything. It's just, you know, according to capacity, they're going to say. And their goal is to bring it to the point where they can fully disclose everything, but according to circumstance, they can, you know, enough is enough, and too much is too much. It's okay.
Wait, no.
You have a different circumstance in mind, I think.
Well, I mean, it's... Well, in that case, I understand your example, but do I... just say the stranger case. Do I just say the truth? Do I lie in that case?
No. According to their capacity.
So,
yeah. According to their capacity. Like, so their kids in school, so you're a Hare Krishna devotee. And there's some kids in school that are from Indian families, and there's some kids in school that are from American families, and there's some kids in school that are from Chinese families. Their perspective is altogether different. So what you're going to say is appropriate to the audience. It's not like, I'm not going to tell you something then. So it's just, you know, according to capacity, you're going to share. And so let's say that the Chinese, kids from Chinese families, they're just largely speaking in a very general way, getting accustomed to a whole idea of religion with God. That's like new religion with God. There's religion in China, but it's without God. And so it's morality. At, you know, at best, Confucius and Buddhism, and, you know, without God. So you have to be very careful and sensitive and, you know, gradually help them get a sense of God as a person. Okay? And then way over here, you know, so it's different. So you're not holding back, like cheating them or something. You're just being appropriate to the audience, time, place, circumstance. Yes?
Maharaj, you mentioned that Christ is a Kshatriya avatar of Krishna.
Prabhupada speaks like that, yes.
Now, then what went wrong with Christianity? Like,
lots of things.
Just from your perspective.
From my perspective. Well, change in his teachings, largely based on the strong desires for sense gratification. That's a big agent for changing things. Not maintaining the prevention against that is disciplined succession. It was established, Christ taught the multitudes, he also, using biblical language, but he also specifically taught 12 disciples, intimate disciples. And they in turn taught disciples, and they in turn taught disciples. But somewhere along the line, that disciplic succession is broken. And so after disciplic succession is broken, anything goes. And if anything goes, what takes over is sense gratification. And sense gratification is even preceded by philosophical or theological deviation. So one of those theological deviations is, who is Christ? So is a Shaktavesh avatar, is Christ God or representative of God? It turns out Christianity had a big split on that theological issue. And in Eastern Christianity, they still hold that Christ is not God, but the Son of God. And the sense of Trinity, Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, there's this, they have something like an Achintya Veda Veda type of consideration, that is, the Son of God, just like in Veda culture. The Son is the representative of the Father by law. The property of the Father is inherited by the Son. It's still law. Because he's as good as the Father, or in the absence of the Father, as the Father. He inherits the debts of the Father too. Legally. So that Christ as the Son of God, as a Shaktivesh avatar, is not different than God, doesn't mean that he's the original personality God had, the same. But there are those that say he's the same. Christ is God. Absolutely the same. Both. And he has some problems. One can say, okay, but it's just a theological problem. theological problems make other problems. The main lesson that as practicing Vaishnavas we need to learn is to don't change things. Don't change theology. Be very careful. At least, you know, the principal bearers of the teachings need to be very circumspect about change through time. What's, just as this previous question, what's principle that's unchanging? And what's application that's a detail? According to time, place, and circumstance, how can things be applied according to our current time without changing principle? Preservation of the doctrine, they call it in the Catholic Church. So, in ISKCON, at our present, we've established, it's a high-sounding title, a Hermeneutics and Epistemology Committee. What's that? It's, you know, hermeneutics is an academic term that deals with how do you understand the meaning of something that was from a previous time to the present time. Hermeneutics. How to make sure that the essence of the of Prabhupada's teachings are preserved through the passage of time. And epistemology means the means of evidence. How do we know something? Like, for example, one of these issues is Prabhupada's sometimes spoke about contemporary issues that are not referred to in the Vedas. He would speak about, you know, modern events. That's in a different category, some persons argue, than when Prabhupada would simply say, you know, the Padma Purana says, or Bhagavad Purana says, or Bhagavad Gita says, and explain it. So, this is subject to, you know, it doesn't have the same weight as that. So we can speak about this in a relative way. You can't speak about that in a relative way. It's hermeneutics. So where is principle that can't be changed and application of principle in detail that's subject to time and circumstance? An example of this is, okay, your question is about Christianity, but yesterday evening there was an educated Indian lady that came to speak after the class and was discussing, you know, the role of women. You know, I'm not a feminist, was the introduction, but, you know, what's the role of women? And, you know, I'm not looking for the equal opportunity organization here, but, you know, what's the role of women? You know, so, you know, all of those preludes indicate she kind of is. doesn't want to be labeled like that. So, Prabhupada was a revolutionary in terms of taking the essence of what's in the scripture, like, you know, we're not this body, and Striya Vaishishtata Shudras Tebhyanti Paramgityam from Bhagavad Gita. Everyone's eligible for Paramgityam, the supreme destination, whether they be Striya, women, Vaishas, mercantile, or Shudras, eligible for perfection, because it's not based upon the body. Or Sarva Upadi, meaning designation. This is a definition of bhakti. Sarva Upadi, So whether you're a man or a woman, that's an upadhi, because it's not who we are. We're spirit soul, not man or woman. Sarva upadhi vinir muktam tat paratvena nirmalam. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. Devotional service is engaging the senses in service of the master of the senses. Rishika Rishikesha. That's bhakti. So who's eligible for bhakti? Anybody. So I gave the example of pujaris. I said just yesterday morning, that very same morning, I was at the Potomac Temple, and there was a woman making the offering to the deity and performing the arti. Now you'll not see that in India. Although it's the same teacher, Srila Prabhupada, you know, it's a no-no in India. That's not according to the teachings. According to the teachings, you just have to be a spirit soul. It doesn't require this upadhi or that upadhi. Just be a spirit soul that follows the standards of purity, and you're eligible to serve Krishna. But in India, it's no, you can't have women dressing the deity and bathing the deity. And, oh, you can't have them do that. So they don't do that. Respecting the local time, place, circumstance. But here's an Indian lady in America dressing the deity and offering to the deity, and because in America it's okay. Philosophically it doesn't change. It's okay in either case. But in time, place, circumstance, it's not done in India. And an application of that also is when Prabhupada received from the Queen of Jaipur, she gifted him with whatever three sets of deities of Radha and Krishna that he wanted out of her whole collection. So one of them was Radha Govinda that he placed on the main stage at the pandal that was being performed in Jaipur. And a woman, although there were sannyasis on the platform with Prabhupada, a woman did the abhishek to install Radha Govinda, Mother Jamuna, under Prabhupada's direction with the sannyasis looking on. But when it came to Vrindavan, no women, not even ISKCON devotees. It was the local Goswamis of the main temples of Vrindavan. Because if they did it, they wouldn't then criticize the installation. So they did it. And in Vrindavan, no women on the altar. So, now, go back to your question. Where did they go wrong? So, this earlier question is a very important question. What's principle? Principles must not change. Application, according to time, place, circumstance, may be considered. And it's not just, you know, anybody, any, as they say in America, any Tom, Dick, and Harry, you know, any fellow can come along and just say, you know, I want to apply it this way. I want to apply it that way. It's chaos. So it's an acharya decision to adjust according to time, place, and circumstance, not a every fellow's decision. But then what's the difference between principle that's not to be changed and detail is how you apply the principle. So not having the cyclic succession is a sure tripwire for running into problems in the course of time. Or say it the other way. Preserving the cyclic succession is the way to preserve the purity and integrity over the passage of time. Strong fidelity. Just as in Madhva line, to this day, you visit Udupi, all you hear is Madhvacharya, 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 Madhvacharya. And go to Sri Rangam. You get the same. Because the fidelity to disciplic succession preserved purity. Ramanujacharya, Ramanujacharya, Ramanujacharya. No, Vedanta Deshika, there are also, you know, other acharyas are important, but there's an infidelity with Ramanujacharya. And through the generations, it's passed on. It's not like only Ramanujacharya can present teachings, and we're just like dodos. We have to resonate fully and vibrate with high fidelity, those same teachings, through disciplic succession. We can check ourselves through disciplic succession. It's the main thing that the banana peel that people slipped on wasn't disciplic. It was installed, it just wasn't continued.
Understand, like, deep down in our heart, and that, like, God is a, like, person. Like, how, like, how should, like, we don't see God personally. So, but we interact with representative God.
There you go.
And like I interact with, like, program model.
Okay.
So, how does
God, are they person? Okay.
So, how does the, how does the relationship between mentor and mentees develop the feeling, deep feelings that God is a person, something like that?
Well, the question that this Indian lady last night asked, a second question, which had to do with something like your question. The relationship with Krishna is direct. And to the extent that others are transparent, the experience is direct. Just like, here's a window. There's a screen, but I can still, you know, the window is transparent, so through the window I can see the front yard. I'm seeing through the window, or my eyeglasses, they're a little dirty, but pretty much transparent. And my seeing of you is direct. I'm using the agency of my glasses to see you in good focus, but, you know, the seeing is direct. So, similarly, those who are using the phrase that was presented before, representatives of Krishna, they're transparent to the degree that they're, you know, good glasses or good windows. They're transparently permitting us or assisting us. Their service is to assist us in seeing Krishna, to experiencing our relationship with Krishna. Now go back to this, you know, earlier discussion where, wow, you know, Krishna's so far away. How can I even think of seeing Krishna or even think of Krishna? So far away, but there's something proximate to me. And those are the relationships that I should deal with in a personal way, and their service, those who are assisting us in seeing Krishna, their business is to just be transparent. Although, there's certainly a relationship. Through that relationship, the relationship with Krishna can be experienced. That's how to see them. And in the ideal world, those personalities are literally transparent. In the real world, they're just doing the service. admittedly less than perfect, but doing the service, trying to assist. And by their doing so, they become purified and they assist you, who may see Krishna as very distant, as being experienceable through that relationship. That's how to see.
Related to, like, I guess, three people's presence. One is maintaining the principle, and it seems like sometimes you're trying to teach a principle, but the other person obviously is, like the other thing that you mentioned, that they're attached to sense gratification in some way. And then, so they're not able to accept the principle. And then also the example, you were talking about that lady, that she didn't want to be labeled in some way.
But in fact, that's where she was coming from.
Yeah.
At least to some degree.
Yeah. So,
an attachment to the body, identification, that was the problem. Not necessarily, I want to push myself forward, but being attached to that identity, that conception of self.
So I guess I find this challenge that that lack of acceptance on the other side of that this is what it is, and there's this thing that, okay, I'm going to be labeled, like I don't want to be labeled like that, but yet that's not what is being taught. And one answer I know is lack of mind and purity, but
well, it's also a question of the capacity of the other individual, or the maturity or the lack of maturity of the other individual to see so that they can take the next step. It's, you know, something like parenting. And, you know, parents to their children may be seeing very clearly something that their children need to do or need to understand, and then how to communicate that effectively. And the child may be not wanting to understand because they're happy being whatever it is that they're being. So they just don't want to understand. But they want some approval, so they'll make like they understand, but they don't really understand because they don't want to understand. You know, because they don't want disapproval. But they really don't understand because they don't want to understand because they're happy being children. Kind of stuck. So what does a parent do? That's, you know, it's a similar question. I was asked a similar question last 48 hours by a parent. You continue showing by example, you continue to be patient. And ultimately the individual, whether it's the child and the parent or the, you know, the instructor instructed, that they decide they want to go forward. And it may take some time. And they may never decide they want to go forward. And then, you know, the instructor will have to make a decision whether I want to continue instructing. And the parent has to go on continuing to try. They don't really have a choice. Prayer is another factor. And somehow, you know, it's like, you know, the fault lines in the earth, somehow, at some point, there's a shift. You know, and then there's a tremor in the earth. You know, then things settle a little differently after that tremor. So sometimes things happen like that. Unexpectedly, there's a shift. And prayer is for the well-being of another person, can have profound effect. So it's, in other words, it's not always just, you know, a choice between being patient, which sounds like doing nothing, and putting pressure, which, you know, may make the shift happen sooner. It's not just like a choice between those two. Prayer is, you know, another force altogether, Krishna within the heart of that living entity. Striving for our own further purity, continuing to be the well-wisher of the child or the individual or whatever the dynamic is. The question that you're raising doesn't have, like, you know, a pat answer, cookie cutter answer. It's always going to be like this. And it's within life and in all so many different dimensions. We have so many different relationships with different types of people. It can be just like a friend and a friend, or somebody you know somewhere and you know that they're struggling or something. The ones that are more proximate have, you know, there's a little more intensity involved in them. The principle doesn't change. If someone doesn't want to move, then what's that? The verse spoken by Prahlad Maharaj: as long as one holds on to the bodily conception of life, there's nothing that person can do that others can do to try to help them, or a combination of the two. As long as one is determined to hold on to the bodily conception of life. So that's something that needs to be addressed, a transcendental conception of life. It opens up possibilities hugely. And conversely, holding on, one remains stuck. The mercy of Krishna enters most easily in the hearts of those who open themselves to the notion of being beyond this, the real soul being beyond this body. I don't want everybody to run out and buy a New York Times, but in the front page of New York Times today, Saturday, there's a whole article about reincarnation, and it's, the perspective of it is not so much from this religion, that religion view on reincarnation, but this professor, that professor, the other professor's deep convictions on reincarnation. And specifically, it's, you know, the soul beyond the body, because that's what reincarnation is. And, you know, professor this one, that one, saying they specifically have conviction that previously, in previous life, they were this, and then they were that, and then the other thing, and so on. And so on. You know, however speculative it may be, it's a front page article in the New York Times. It's like, you know, okay now to speak about such things. It's going to help people who are on the fence, on the border of, well, is there, isn't there, be open to the idea. So in our lives, we're certainly, it's our teaching, we're open to the idea. But we may, at the same time, be holding on to a bodily conception, and with that bodily conception, there's all this emotion that goes with, you know, the body and past experiences of being in this body, that body, and carrying all that baggage with us because of our strong identification with the body. That's illusion. And then, like, you know, we live it out. Makes it hard to go the next step in spiritual life. makes it a little hard for the parents of children, makes it a little hard for teachers of students, makes it hard for people of the world to live in a transcendental way. Okay. We're done? Yes? Yes?
Thank you, Maharaj. But just an offshoot of Mataji's question, like how to be a good disciple, how to be a good instructee, or how to be a good receiver of mercy, because this is the problem that I face too, being an instructee, you know, not to change how does one become a good disciple, a good instructee, a good receiver of mercy?
That's a wonderful question. I'll give a few things. Read Srimad Bhagavatam because it's filled with it. Filled with it. And one of the points that Srimad Bhagavatam instructs is respect. It like opens the heart. And respect is kind of a quality, but in the Bhagavatam where respect is very specific, the respect due to appreciation of some merit, in specific merit, some specific quality or capacity or something. And then I can hold regard for my teacher or my instructor or my spiritual master or my parent with esteem because of that respect that I hold, and that I can be the receiver of that which they wish to give me better. It's a natural ego shrinker, or it helps us stay in the position of humility with proper regard and respect. Where it is we do, not just blindly, but you know, consciously, where it's due. One of the obstacles in being a good instructee is our own conceptions. Like, you know, we have to live with some conceptions, so we live with our conceptions. And we've carefully considered our conceptions and we're invested in our conceptions. And so when we're hearing some instruction, we hear through those filters, which may not be with, you know, on the basis of our conceptions. And we're attached to our conceptions. They're ours. It's our treasury. Our valuable conceptions. And so we can't receive well. We can't be good instructees if we are not willing to set them aside. Something that Prabhupada referred to in at least a couple hundred different lectures that I can recall hearing. He refers to Sanatan Goswami, who is highly learned, vastly learned, and when he approached Lord Chaitanya, Prabhupada described, he approached him as a blank slate. Just write on me. Who am I? Kayami. Like, you know, that's pretty basic. So, take away that conception, and all the other conceptions also fall off the map. And, you know, I'm such a fool, I don't even know who I am. I'm such a fool that people say I'm learned and I accept it. But you know what? I know the real truth. I don't even know who I am. Yet I'm such a fool. I think, yes, I'm very limited. When people say you're very limited, they flatter me. I think, yes, yes. I'm very limited. So, blank slate. That's humility. Now, when you're a blank slate, it doesn't mean you don't, you're like you're a dummy and you don't think about what's said. You have to carefully consider what's said. So they can, like, go, you know, be inscripted in your hard drive. So asking questions from different angles is appropriate. And, you know, your light's on, your intelligence is operating. So let me clearly understand what you're saying. Is it this or is it that? So being inquisitive in spirit is necessary. Being free from prior conceptions certainly helps a lot, being a good instructee. Respect for the instructor and the body of teachings that one is receiving those instructions from. A mood of service that says, it's not just theoretical, I'm ready to apply it in service. As an expression of gratitude to you for giving me this nice teaching. And then I can see that it works. It's really just the real deal. Those are some things. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Srila Prabhupada Maharaj.